Okay, thank you. Yes, I'll talk about Linux verification of Linux kernel code. So I'll start out with what is program verification? Program verification involves the source code and some specification of what the source code is supposed to do. And then our goal is to be sure that the specification describes what the source code actually does. So ideally, this checking should be done automatically. So here's a simple example. This was presented in the Linux Lund conference a couple years ago. Here we have the swap function, extremely simple function. So what we would like to know about this function? So we might need to think about what the function does a little bit. It takes two arguments. Those two arguments are pointers. And the idea is we want to swap the values that are referenced by those two pointers. So clearly we have to be able to dereference those pointers, and we have to be able to write new values back into them. So then those are our requirements on the inputs, and the goal for what the function should actually do is that the values at those two places should be interchanged. So then we want to consider, so that's kind of a high-level English language specification of what should happen. What we would like to have is some kind of formal representation that we can drop into some tool that will be checked. So the first property is that the two pointers are readable and writable. So this is, we use the notation of Framacy, which is a tool for checking properties of C code. So basically we need to require that the two input parameters, the pointers, are valid, meaning that we can dereference them and we can also write to the memory that is referenced by those pointers. And the next one is that we want that the final value of P, that's pointed to by P, should be the original value of Q. So we can express that by saying ensures, that means a requirement on the output, that the final dereference of the pointer P is equivalent to the original value that was dereferenced by Q. And similarly, we want the final Q value to be the same as the P value. So the final value that's dereferenced by Q should be the original value that's dereferenced by P. So far, things seem fairly simple. Now we put all this into a comment that is before the source code. We get a single file, and then we can drop this into the Framacy tool. And in a few seconds, it tells us that all the goals were proved. And so now we have confidence that our swap function is doing what it's supposed to, or at least what the specifications that we wrote said it is supposed to do. So the question is, I mean, swap function is very nice, but it's pretty simple. We probably have some confidence it works. So we want to, the question we want to ask is, could we do this for the Linux kernel? So there's kind of a ongoing discussion about, like, requirements and documentation and how can we improve somehow the correctness and understandability of Linux kernel source code. So this sits somewhere in that space. Probably, maybe the biggest question we ask is, like, do we want to do this for the entire Linux kernel, little parts of it, very important parts of it, parts that we don't understand? That's all very open questions. So the positive aspects of writing these specifications and checking these specifications, just thinking about what the specification should be, can lead you to find bugs. So later on in this talk, I will describe some experiments that we've done. And in several of these experiments, just in doing writing the specifications and checking them, we have actually found some bugs that have been submitted to the Linux kernel and accepted, or maybe found some potential bugs that were in old code that doesn't exist anymore, and so on. So writing specifications means you have to somehow think pervasively, thoroughly about what your code does. It's kind of a different point of view than when you're just trying to run it and so on, do some tests or something, and so it can highlight some issues. The specifications also provide an unambiguous notation for what the function is supposed to do. If you write out something in English, you may have some, the person who writes them has their intended meaning of the English words, but the person who reads them might understand something different. There's lots of things that you can write in English that are somehow like friendly English language that are kind of open to misinterpretation afterwards. So if you write out things in a more formal way, there's perhaps less confusion. And the specifications, if they're written out in a formal way, can be checked mechanically against the source code. And that can happen also over time. If you make some changes to your function, maybe you just make some refactoring to your function, you expect it doesn't change anything at all, so then your specifications might still continue to work. Or you might make some small changes, and then maybe your specifications will need adjustment, but you'll still have some kind of control, some kind of insurance that what the function was doing before is still what it's going to be doing. On the other hand, on the downside, creating these specifications is hard. We're not going to create any more specifications, but you'll see them, and they're quite big and complex. And then the question is, I mean, I just argued that maybe this whole specification idea is useful as the code changes, but still, in general, can we really hope to maintain these things over time? Developers are already more interested in improving their code. They don't really want to improve this kind of mysterious formal language. And of course, there's no magic bullet. If your specifications say the wrong thing, then you'll be checking that your code does the wrong thing. You won't really have advanced things very much. There's, in practice, I think, some kind of check on that, in that if you write bad specifications, it won't match your code, and then you'll kind of be forced to iterate until when they match up, you might be closer to reality. But there's always the risk that specifications are wrong, and you ensure that your code does the wrong thing. So far we have done three experiments. One of them is the function should we balance. It's part of the Linux kernel scheduler's load balancer. Select idle core, it's a function that is used when a task wakes up and you want to figure out where to place it on the machine. And ftrace event enable disable, this is part of the event tracing infrastructure. So somebody might argue that maybe load balancing and task scheduling are really core aspects of operating system kernel. Maybe the code for enabling, disabling, tracing is not really all that important. But actually, the third case, we picked it because some human actually wrote specifications in natural language, and so it was the opportunity to compare them. So we'll start with should we balance. Load balancing, the idea of load balancing is we have some CPU. It would like to take on some more work, maybe because it's idle, maybe because it just has not enough stuff to do. And what it needs to do is search across the entire machine, or in general across some set of CPUs, to see if there's some other work that's available that it can steal. So this is beneficial because you'll get more work done more fast, but it takes time because we have to look at all those different CPUs, look at their data structures, maybe count some things and so on. And so what we want to do is just let the first CPU do the stealing and not all of them at the same time. Should we balance is sort of a gatekeeper that each CPU says, should we balance, and then sometimes it will turn true, yes, you'll get to do the load balancing, and sometimes it doesn't. Here is a recent version of the function. It's not a huge function. It's not a small function. It's just what it is. The most interesting part of it is this loop in the middle. This loop is quite interesting for two reasons. It has this for each CPU and thing. So that's like a special purpose. It's like a for loop. But actually, it's iterating over a mask of CPUs. So you can think of it as sort of a set of CPUs, but it's actually implemented it as a bit mask. And it's going to go through the bit mask and see which CPUs are under consideration, and then do the loop body only for those CPUs. So that's fairly easy to understand. Then the more frightening thing about this loop is here in the middle, we have this CPU mask and not. And this is a side effecting operation. What this is doing is removing some CPUs from the set that we're iterating over.